the Agribusiness Report. I'm Tony St. James. We're joined today by Andrew Brandt. Andrew is Director of Trade Policy with the U.S. Grains Council. Andrew, great to see you.
Good to see you again, Tony.
You know, I love the picture in the background here of the map, just because there are probably very few places on that map that U.S. grains aren't going.
I would agree with that. There are a couple more places we would like it to go. But certainly if you look at Asia, China, Southeast Asia, we have a heavy influence there, and that's where a lot of our products go, as well as Mexico is a big market for us. But certainly, yes, I put that map up when I got here because we kept talking about all these countries, and it was just easier to have a map on the wall I could easily look up to and kind of see the trade routes and distances.
So when we talk about the movement of U.S. products, and the U.S. Grains Council focused on barley, corn, sorghum, ethanol, co-products, where are they leaving the U.S. as far as port-wise? Are we leaving West Coast, East Coast, Gulf?
It depends on if it's going out. I mean, the bulk shipments are, number one, New Orleans probably, as well as up there on the Pacific Northwest, there's a terminal. As far as bulk shipments, I would say those are number one and number two. But then as there are more value-added products that may be shipped out in containers, you know, those go through more more ports than we're used to, whether that be L.A. or, some even on the East Coast. Much smaller quantities, but the footprint has grown a little with that.
Okay, so let's talk about a partner that we're not loading a barge and sending our products to, because most of it goes by rail. I'm talking about Mexico now. What are you watching when it comes to Mexico?
Well, with Mexico, our friends down in Mexico, which has traditionally been the number one market for corn in the last two decades, all but one year. They were the number one export destination for U.S. corn. They have their president has issued a biotech decree, which the first iteration of essentially said we want to buy no more biotech corn by 2024. They updated that decree this February, and specifically on white corn used in tortillas and other food products, they want no GMO corn. But that decree also includes a provision that says we still do want to also phase out all GMO corn completely, even from animal feed, as that is attainable. So we, of course, object to that. It's not that we are forcing them to buy GMO corn. It's more we completely object to a government policy that prohibits it. So we are of the mindset the market can decide. If you want to only, prior to this decree, they could purchase non-GMO corn. They would have had to probably go out and offer a higher premium to get more acres of production up. But that was the system before we had this decree. Because this decree is so blatantly just a prohibition on GMO corn use inside that country, that is something we have we are working with USTR and the U.S. government to hopefully reverse.
A lot of it comes back to telling your story, educating, if you will. I know we don't like to say that we're educating somebody or that they need to be educated, but it's providing the information, the facts, if you will. When it comes to sustainability, is that a story that the U.S. Grains Council can tell as well?
Absolutely. So we would, point out that biotechnology is a big tool in the toolbox of more sustainable crops in the future. So, there are certain activist groups that don't like certain crop protection chemicals. What they never do is explain what the alternative is. You want to go full organic, you're going to pull out all the old cultivators. John Deere and Case are going to have to start making them again. And what do we, when you till that soil, you're releasing carbon into the air. You're also getting erosion and runoff. So biotechnology is a major piece of no-till, also just crop protection in general. And that's one of the points we've made, not only in Mexico, but also as we go around the world. But sustainability certainly is a big issue here. And one of the ways we've been doing, one of the, we just launched a new program. Officially, it's called Sustainable Corn Exports. But what we do is have the ability to issue a record of sustainability with an export shipment of U.S. corn. So there are kind of two pieces of that. One, we have the actual record of sustainability, which is an electronic document that can kind of follow this corn through the supply chain, even if it's processed overseas. We have the ability to break it down into smaller pieces in the co-products. That way, this record of sustainability can follow that grain all the way through the supply chain and be used by companies that want to be able to source verify their ingredients. The other piece of it, and what that record of sustainability represents, is what we call the Corn Sustainability Assurance Protocol, which is a document that basically outlines how U.S. corn farmers are growing corn. You know, a lot of people around the world don't know that in order to be eligible for crop insurance or Title I, your land has to be in what's called conservation compliance under the Farm Bill. They also aren't aware of all the gains we made in the efficiency of U.S. corn production over, the, say, the last 30 years, as well as some of the laws that prohibit certain practices. So that's the document that outlines all of that. So when that customer overseas gets its record of sustainability, it has kind of the explanation document with it. So if they're ever hit up by someone on where their ingredients are coming from, they have an electronic verified digital copy of the record of sustainability and then this explanation document that goes with it. We just launched that in February, so we're still kind of getting it off the ground. But as you see around the world, not only are there potentially government policies that require this type of compliance, but there's also consumer demand for it, and this is our effort to you know, start to come in compliance with that, make sure the U.S. corn farmers are positioned to satisfy the need of the marketplace and potentially government regulators if need be. And so we're very excited about it and looking forward to continuing to see how that program expands.
So we started with, there's some areas on that map that you would like to see better trade relations, if you would. You're talking about telling the story of U.S. grains. So I guess the next obvious question is, where are we when it comes to U.S. trade policy? Are we working to open some of those? Or do we have a clear idea of what's happening here? How do you follow that?
So we are working on things. As far as the, say, the offensive effort of the United States government, and by that I mainly mean USTR throughout the world, right now it would be IPEF, which is Indo-Pacific Economic Framework. That is a unique take on, or say, a modern version of a trade agreement, I guess you would say. Specifically, though, it does not include market access. Now, that's not all bad. There are a lot of issues, say, sanitary and phytosanitary and, you know, non-tariff trade barriers. So the really, some might say, boring regulatory stuff or, you know, customs as far as electronic customs papers. There are certain countries in the world where it's still all, you know, hard copy if you want to deliver grain. You know, you might have a stack of sheet papers with the regulations that's 100 pages deep in some of these countries. So there are still gains that can be made with an effort like IPEF. You know, certainly we at the Grains Council are constantly advocating for free and open trade. We believe we don't want trade barriers anywhere in the world. Our farmers are very efficient and competitive, and we are happy to go out in the marketplace and compete. But certainly it's a never-ending effort to make sure we not only open new markets, but then there's also more modern times maintaining the markets we've built in the last 20 years as well.
You mentioned competition, and you can have fierce competition, but at the same time appreciate those competitors to a certain level that you work together in other areas. I think you would call that kind of a coalition building. Does that happen with some of our other competitive countries?
It certainly does. So, as an example, in the corn industry, we have MAISOL, which is the International Alliance of Corn Producers. The countries in that are the United States, Argentina, and Brazil. Together, those three countries represent 50% of the corn produced in the world, and as of the Ukraine war, we represent 80% of worldwide corn exports. So we formed Maisel. It was originally formed back in 2013, predating me here at the Grains Council by quite a few years. But the point of that coalition, it's the International Alliance, is there are issues that we are all in agreement on, specifically biotechnology, so getting the traits approved throughout the different regulatory bodies, as well as, more recently, you know, back to the sustainability piece, our friends in Europe and some of their ideas around farm to fork. You know, Maisel can go there as a, you know, joint force of the joint face of the three countries with farmers. When we do a Maisel mission, there's always at least one farmer from each country. And we show up and tell a story together about how in unison we represent, you know, 80% of the exports. Here's the technology we use. Here's why we use it. And for anyone trying to limit that or, you know, stigmatize that in a negative way, there are certainly consequences. I mean, this unfortunate war in Ukraine and kind of how that's disrupted global grain markets, we have seen that we do not want lower yields. We want to have grain and food readily available so we can ship it where it's needed in the world. And so that is one of the things Maisel's been fairly effective at since we have all three countries working together. That doesn't mean we don't compete. Certainly our friends in Brazil are having a good export year for now. I think that'll swing back, but you know, we do have to compete with them, and that's not just on the price of corn, you know, currency, which is not really something farmers directly impact, certainly plays a role in that. But yes, we compete with them, but we also work with them where there's common interest.
And that's Maisel. Now, you can follow U.S. Grains Council online, grains.org. Andrew Brandt, Director of Trade Policy, U.S. Grains Council, on today's Agribusiness Report.